The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today, Thursday, March 29th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We have a great show for you here on the Stash today. First up today, we have news from Normal. Our news today. Cincinnati City Council makes pot recriminalization emergency ordinance indefinite. Members of the Cincinnati City Council voted 7-2 this week to make a provisional ordinance criminalizing minor marijuana possession offenses, quote, indefinite, close quote. Despite the law's apparent failure to show a demonstrable reduction in serious crime or so-called drug tourism. The municipal ordinance, initially passed by the council in March 2006, was slated to expire this week. Under the ordinance, marijuana offenders in Cincinnati face up to 30 days in jail, a $250 fine, and a criminal record for possessing small quantities of cannabis. By contrast, under state law, possession of up to 100 grams of marijuana is punishable by a $100 citation and no jail time. Members of the city council pushed for the ordinance last year, arguing that it would reduce the city's violent crime rate and dissuade citizens of neighboring states from traveling to Cincinnati to purchase pot. However, according to crime statistics published last week in the Cincinnati Beacon blog, the number of murders, rapes, burglaries, and robberies in the city has increased since the passage of last year's ordinance. In addition, the percentage of non-Ohio citizens cited under the ordinance remained virtually unchanged from 2005 to 2006. According to a preliminary six-month fiscal review of the ordinance, enforcement of the law has increased city police costs by more than 150%. A one-year report summarizing the law's impact on crime and city finances was not made available to the public. Two members of the council, Councilman David Crowley and Vice Mayor Jim Tarbell, voiced their opposition to the increased penalties and voted against the measure. Mayor Mark Mallory, whose office also voiced opposition to the ordinance, let the ordinance become law without his signature. We have links for more information on the Cincinnati ordinance on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Lynn Wilson is a marijuana reform activist in Cincinnati who's covered the reform effort on her radio programs and website at Hemp Rock Radio, and they can be found online at hemprock.com. Lynn attended and spoke at the city council sessions in Cincinnati and joined us by phone to discuss the vote this morning. Lynn, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Hey, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be a guest.
Wonderful to speak with you today, Lynn. First, tell us what you and the other opponents to this ordinance expressed at the meetings.
Well, number one, that we don't need this marijuana ordinance for the main reason, of course, is that it is not true that the Ohio decriminalization law, which is a payout ticket, minor misdemeanor, is a loophole that tells the cops they can't search an individual even after they know they have drugs. I mean, come on, Chris. How many people do you know, even in the state of Ohio, where the cop walks up? Now, I'm not going to say, a sidebar here. I'm not going to say that there isn't some officers out there that don't do the further search and say, all right, I found your joint. Here's your ticket. I had that happen at the Prince concert in 1980-something for the Purple Rain show years ago. And I know other people that happens to. They just say, here's your ticket, go on your way. But depending on who the people are and who the officers are, they do have the right under probable cause laws with a smell, not only under regular Supreme Court ruling, but Ohio Supreme Court ruling in 2000, that if an officer smells marijuana, and because they can attest and testify that they know what marijuana smells like, even though I think that's debatable, that gives them the right to further search a suspect. Now, that's just the as far as technical stuff from my perspective. That alone should have convinced the other council people that Cecil Thomas, former retired police officer here in Cincinnati, African American, council member now who got this pushed through, is not, I mean, just because he's a cop, and I'm not saying all cops lie, but I'm saying that this is not correct information that this gentleman is giving out. He's got people bamboozled in thinking that all because of the decrim law, our city has gone to pot and everybody's carrying guns and that's where all the violence has come from. And in order to get the guns, you have to go arrest pot smokers because all the guys down in the street that are smoking pot and selling pot all have guns. Now, yeah, some of them do. Unfortunately, that's what the drug war has brought us, Chris, is more illegal guns in our streets. We know this through prohibition that this is what happens, and we now know through drug prohibition it's happening again.
And you've pointed out that this has had a particular impact on the city already.
It's now clogging the courts. There was 5,500 some odd tickets written in the year before this law took effect. Most of those were paid out. They did not go to the court system, specifically, of course, because in 2000, Judge Stockdale, who's still our judge, did a case precedent where he said, quit making them pay $150 in costs. That's making people come down to court and fight it and try to get their fines lowered. Just put out $100, payout ticket plus 50 court costs. People will pay it. They won't even come in, and that unclogged the courts since 2000 for marijuana, that is. Now, they claim that it's working and it's brought drug crimes down when, in fact, truly what we believe has happened is that the number, which is now 3,000 arrested under this law, is more due to the fact that two things. A lot of people heard about what happened and they've stopped coming to Cincinnati. Does that mean they've stopped smoking? No, they've just stopped going downtown to buy it. The other factor that I believe is most important is that now each cop who arrests somebody is spending 2 to 3 hours down at the jail arresting and booking them, not counting what they have to do to go to court. That's separate. But just that booking takes them off the street for 2 to 3 hours. Now, what happened in Cincinnati yesterday, Chris, is a woman, her mother called because the estranged boyfriend was beating her up. It took them 20 minutes to get there. They said they were too busy, that they didn't think it was that big of a deal. Well, I can assure you they were probably going downtown looking for pot smokers while that woman was getting beat up. So it doesn't matter whether this law is in effect or the decrim is in effect. You and I both know through our experience in the drug war movement that this is only creating more problems. So that's one of the aspects that we fought. One gentleman is a local real estate guy. He came in and stated that as a landlord, they're telling me that they're going to try to pass a law that he, as speaking for himself, can't rent to anybody that has a drug conviction. Now, if you're a rapist, you only have to sign in at the county, and they know where you live, but you can't be discriminated against. The landlord still has to rent to you, okay? If you're a murderer, landlords, they can't discriminate. There's no rules that if you're a murderer, rapist, or a robber, that they have to. Now, I'm not going to say that landlords don't do checks on people, but there's no law that says they can't rent to them, and they can be fined if they do. They're trying to get a law passed, though, where the landlords would be responsible and have to pay a fine if they are found to have rented to somebody with a drug conviction. And this guy presented this aspect of it. We don't know this man. He's not part of the drug war community. He's just somebody that knows what's going on and doesn't like it. And what he presented is not only Well, if this law passes, will that displace a large group of people that won't be able to be rented to and be able to get a home for themselves? Now, with the way the law is in Cincinnati, that's going to be affecting them, their ability to get a federal aid if they want to get themselves out of poverty and go back to school, which is obviously what's going on, because if 90%, and this is what I wanted to go over what this man brought up, the figures of the 3,000 arrests in the last year, Chris, 90% are African American. Now, the reason for this is they are targeting certain neighborhoods which happen to be more low-income African-American. You know, this is a product of the drug war. Drugs have scourged these neighborhoods. Of course, they're inside homes in other neighborhoods, but on the streets in the ghetto areas and in the areas in which they're going after, the target areas, as they call them. Now, last year, when this passed, there was a black woman, councilwoman, who I have to say, her name is Lakeeta Cole. She, the year before that in 05, made statements in the hearing that when David Pepper tried to get this passed 2 years ago that she did not support it. So myself and a bunch of people voted for her. Last year, she showed support for it, and I sent a kid from our Students for Sensible Drug Policy down to speak to her to let her know, because everybody was taking different positions, you know. And Todd went down and tried to explain to her, look, you're going against the voters who put you here, that helped put you in office. And her attitude was strictly racism. She not only stated it to him, and he tried to explain to her that's not what he meant, she stated this, and you can hear this in the file on Hemp Rock's radio page where the little links are for the files of last year's comments from the council. She has a nerve to say, I'm tired of these people coming down here and telling me that I'm going against the people who voted for me. What makes people think that only black people smoke pot? Now, my question is what makes her think that only black people voted for her? This was about pot smokers that voted for her, not the black community. I'm sure black people voted for her, but most of the people that I know, we have a few in our group that are African American, and I think that's great. We'd love more help and more people to align with us. But most of our group, unfortunately, is more white, and we just looked at it as we were the pot smokers that voted for you, and she twisted it into we were saying only black people smoke pot, and she's going to make sure that there is no disparity and that everybody is going to be arrested under this law. And what she neglected to pay attention to is that she's wrong. 90% have been African American. So what we believe is going on, and this gentleman stated this to the council on Tuesday, to the committee, this is ethnic cleansing. Just as Councilman Tarbell said on the bench yesterday, and the day before, that he's afraid that this is going to make it worse for communication between the police and the African-American community, because they already don't want to turn their friends in, their neighbors. They see crime, they close their door. They're going to close their door even more because they're being targeted. And that just causes more problems for our city. They were totally ignored, him and the other councilman, David Crowley. David Crowley is so much against this that he's not on the law committee, Chris, and he shows up Tuesday this year and last year voicing his opinion in opposition to this, even though he's not on the committee. That's how dedicated he is to stopping it.
Let me also ask you, the mayor of Cincinnati was opposed to this ordinance, as I understand.
Either year, last year or this year. He would have vetoed it if it would have been a 5-4 vote. A 6-3 is not quite good enough for a veto, but he could have maybe done something. But with a 7-2 vote, that is not in the rules. He cannot do a veto. His only option is to not sign it and put his voice in there to say, I don't support this. And he does not. Matter of fact, you know, some of the options that we have, which one is getting a 30-day petition together where we have to have at least 7,000 legitimate voter registrations, people who are registered to vote, signatures, and do a repeal of the law, our ordinance. You know, our rules are we have 30 days from, you know, including today on out, to gather those signatures. And the Citizens for Safer Cincinnati, myself, and an umbrella of organizations that we're calling the Coalition Against the Marijuana Ordinance, which, unbeknownst to me, spelled CAMO. So that's a loose term we're using just to show that there's many groups here that are working on this. Our plan is to do the petition drive, and at the same time, another potential is to get a charter amendment put on the ballot, which would we could get a law passed, provided that the voters support us on this, that the city cannot put any more harsher penalties against marijuana here, that, you know, other than what the state has. So that's an option. These are ideas that were told to us by the mayor's office. And they're working with us and going to help us figure out how to get this thing to happen. So they are totally against this. They know it's a waste of time. They know it's a waste of not only the tax dollars. It's hurting people, clogging our courts. And they are totally oblivious to that. The comments they made are not only ludicrous, they don't even make sense. You see, I think they're smoking crappy pot, to be quite honest with you. Okay, because anybody in the, my mother watched me on the news last night, and my mom's been supporting me since 90. And I said, Mom, call up. I'm on Channel 9 News. And she called me back. She goes, I don't understand what's going on. Why do they need to go after pot smokers for guns? And I went, we're trying to figure out the same thing, Mom. She's 81, going to be 82 this year, and even she sees through the bull crap.
Lynn Wilson is a marijuana reform activist in Cincinnati. She can be found online at hemprock.com. We have links to her website today at normalaudiostash.com. Next up today, we're going to focus on a story you might have seen in national media, a story about cannabis from across the world, marijuana and Passover. Here's the story. Pro-marijuana party in Israel says pot is not kosher for Passover. The Green Leaf Party, a small but generally popular political party in Israel, asked religious members of their party to abstain from hemp foods and smokable marijuana during their observance of Passover this year. Religious Jews observe Passover by cleaning out certain items or isolating items in their home and abstaining from specific foods. Jewish biblical laws prohibit eating leavened foods during Passover. People are familiar with the tradition of replacing bread with flat crackers called matzah, but later injunctions by European rabbis extended those rules to forbid other foods like beans and corn. And more recent rulings have further expanded that ban to include hemp seeds and marijuana. Some rabbis say that hemp fits into the same category, which includes beans, and is forbidden by most Ashkenazi Jewish religious authorities during Passover. Some rabbis said that that view of hemp extends to marijuana. Israel's relationship with cannabis predates even biblical times, and it's very widely used today, both recreationally and for self-medication. Delta-9 THC, the psychoactive chemical in marijuana, was first isolated by Raphael Mechelam at the Weizmann Institute in Israel in 1964. Marijuana is illegal on paper in Israel, and the Green Leaf Party advocates for legal reform based on the biblical references to cannabis. The Green Leaf Party polled a number of rabbis before they issued an edict last week, asking their religious supporters to abstain from eating hemp products or smoking marijuana during Passover observations. The party also alluded to the fact that if marijuana was deemed by rabbis as not kosher during Passover, then it could be understood as being kosher the rest of the year. The term kosher refers to foods that are ritually pure under ceremonial and dietary religious law. But not all observant Jews need to sweep out their pot. The rabbinic injunctions banning hemp were never adopted by Sephardic Jews, who come from countries in the Middle East, North Africa, and parts of Spain, which means there's no reason that they can't keep smoking marijuana. Joining us today to explore this fascinating topic further is Michelle Levine from the Green Leaf Party of Israel. She joined us by phone from Tel Aviv this afternoon. Michelle, welcome to the Audio Stash today.
Thank you.
That's wonderful to speak with you today, Michelle. Thanks again for taking time to join us on a very busy evening there. So tell us how this topic of cannabis and Passover came about.
I am acquainted with a journalist. I'm in the environmental movement here in Israel, Actually, I work for a very important organization called the Society for the Protection of Nature in Israel. And I know all the journalists because I'm doing publicity work all the time. And she called me because she had read on a website, kashrut.com, that hemp is listed as kidneyot, which is known in English as legumes. And legumes are not kosher for Passover. So she wanted to know what was our take on this, that if hemp was not kosher for Passover, and if cannabis by association was not kosher for Passover, would we be willing to take a stand and say that we would boycott it on Passover and tell our people to be aware of the fact that it might not be kosher? And as far as we're concerned, we're not rabbis, and we don't want to take any rabbinical stance, and we don't want to make any rabbinical judgments. You know, those kind of things are for the rabbis to decide. But if they say that hemp is kidneyot, then grass is kidneyot. And if grass is kidneyot and it's not kosher for Passover, then what it means is that people from Ashkenazi descent, which is from Europe primarily, or the United States, then Jews of Ashkenazi descent are forbidden to eat it. Jews of Sephardi descent, however, which is the Middle East, or if they're from Spain or a few other countries, then Jews of Sephardi descent have a different tradition, and they do eat legumes on Passover. So it's only relevant anyway to Ashkenazi Jews. And also there's another exception. So first there's an exception on legumes for Sephardim, and the second exception is for medical use. You can pretty much use anything you need to during Passover if it's going to help you to survive, if you need it to survive as a medical thing. So anybody who has cancer or AIDS is taking marijuana for any medical purpose has absolutely nothing to worry about. But we thought we should warn Ashkenazi Jews that maybe they should be aware that maybe grass could be legumes, because we have a lot of religious Jews who are very concerned about following the law strictly. And we have no problem with saying that it's not kosher for Passover, because that seems to us to imply that it is kosher for the rest of the year. And that was our interest in the whole issue. The people should discuss whether or not grass is kosher. It's something that grows out of the ground, and therefore there should be a rabbinical ruling on whether or not it is kosher.
And how is marijuana viewed and used in Israel today?
Well, I have to say, hash is much more popular in Israel than marijuana with most of the public, partially because it's just much more available. But if people can get grass, they're also very, very happy to get it. And since we were first contacted by the Jerusalem Post reporter, we've had dozens of people calling Alei Arok and offering to be we have an expression in Jewish terms. Every Jew will be familiar with the expression, the Shabbos Goy. The Shabbos Goy is somebody who turns your lights on and off because you're not allowed to turn the lights on and off on Shabbat. And they know that you want the light off, so they turn it off. And they're not Jewish, so it doesn't matter. They don't have to follow the law. And so many people who either aren't Jewish or are Sephardi have called the Alei Arok saying, we're happy to be the Shabbos Goy and buy all the chametz. You know, if you have a problem with your marijuana, we'd like to take it off your hands. And of course, each person thinks they're being original and is funny. You know, it is funny. I don't think anybody wants to part with their, you know, cannabis, really. And the other thing is that the rule about legumes is that you don't have to get rid of them, whereas bread, anything associated with bread, you have to actually remove from your home and sell it, either throw it away or sell it. And then after Passover is over, you can buy it back from the non-Jew that you sold it to. But with legumes, you can actually just put it in a drawer of your house and tape up that drawer and not open it for the whole week. So it's much more lenient in any case, and you don't really have to get rid of it. But still, it is funny, and the whole issue is funny. And I have to say that every time we get press here in Israel, it's usually an opportunity for the media to laugh at us, because it's entertaining to the public that there exists a political party that's main issue is the legalization of marijuana.
While there might be this lighthearted attitude towards the Greenleaf Party, your message is very serious, and it's based in the Bible, and the relationship of Jews with cannabis really goes back to biblical times.
That's right. Where it comes from the Bible is actually in the Torah. It talks about the Kohanim, the Kohen priests, who, when they approached the Ark, would put something called knebosim, oil of knebosim on their heads. And there are many, many rabbinical arguments that knebosim, of course, is cannabis. And so we are not really going against the rabbis or taking any drastic step to say that cannabis is listed in the Torah, and it also says in the Torah that God put the plants and the animals here for man's use. And then it goes on in the Torah to say which things are explicitly forbidden, and cannabis is not among them. So the only thing we're left to conclude is that cannabis is permissible. And not only permissible, but there are many, many stories of cannabis being used at different points in time in Jewish history. And so I think it's very likely that the ancient Jews were using cannabis, and also the modern religious Jews are using cannabis today. The ones that you consider the ultra-Orthodox or Hasidic in the United States, in Israel are referred to as Haredim, and the Haredim are smoking grass much more than the secular people. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, but you walk into the Haredi community and you'll smell marijuana everywhere. And I think it's because the ultra-Orthodox Jews are aware that it's actually permissible according to Jewish tradition. The only reason that it's not permissible, when I've asked rabbis about this, you know, does Judaism allow us to smoke marijuana? And I'm not talking about on Passover, because maybe it's not kosher for Passover, but the rest of the year. The rabbis have told me, well, there's a law, there's a rule in Judaism that you're supposed to follow the laws of the state that you live in. And it's illegal in Israel, so we're not supposed to smoke it. And I said, you know, of course, the first question I have to ask is, what if it was legal in the state of Israel? What would the rabbi say then? And they say, well, you're not really supposed to smoke, because when you smoke, you're harming the body. And you're not supposed to harm the body, because the body is also creation of God, as is cannabis. And you must respect God's creation. So I said, well, what if we don't smoke it? What if it becomes legal? We make it into an oil and we eat it, or we consume it in some other way so that we're not harming the body. What if we use some kind of a vaporizer? Yeah, what if we use a vaporizer or find ways to get around the harming of the lungs? And the rabbis say, well, if it's legal in the state of Israel and you're not harming the lungs, the rabbis are not going to argue against it. And so what it comes down to is that Judaism allows marijuana. And if Judaism allows for marijuana and it's a religious, and it's going to be a religious ruling, then I think one day that could have a substantial, very substantial impact on the legal status of marijuana in Israel, especially since we don't have separation of church and state here. And the religious parties have a lot of power in the Knesset, a lot of power. And they've privately spoken with us and said that if we get into Knesset, they're probably going to be supporting us in our bid to make cannabis legal. So I think that we have a lot of respect for the rabbis and a lot of respect for the religious people, and we feel that they're on our side.
Also, too, Michelle, in modern times, Israel has had this incredible relationship with cannabis. Delta-9 THC, first isolated by scientists there, and there's currently a lot of scientific research being done on marijuana and its component cannabinoids. So, do you think that the science being produced in Israel is something that will help public opinion about marijuana in general?
No, and I would say, you know, it's absurd, because you're absolutely right that some very important marijuana research is happening here, or I guess, you know, as Dr. Rafael Meshulam would say, you know, his research is specifically in cannabinoids. So, you know, it's a derivative or something. It's not directly cannabis. But, of course, it is cannabis, you know, whatever the scientists want to say in order to keep their grant money. Right? And I had the unbelievable opportunity of meeting Dr. Meshulam recently when Dr. Grinspoon came to Israel to speak at our conference last October. It was the first joint Arab-Israeli conference for marijuana policy and peace. And it was really exciting because not only did Dr. Lester Grinspoon come to Israel for the conference, but also Dr. Rick Dublin came, and we had Arab and Israeli speakers, and it was unbelievable. But yet, even though we have incredibly successful events, I would say the public is still fairly oblivious to the medical marijuana research that's going on here, to what kind of medical problems that cannabis can help with. For example, in the U.S., I think most of the public knows that it's good for at least for cancer and AIDS. Here, that surprises the average person in the public when they find that out. You know, we are still at a more basic level in terms of public awareness campaign than you are in the United States, partially because of the success of organizations like Normal. I think you've had tremendous success with the public in the U.S. and in North America, and we need to get up to that stage, because once the public understands how helpful it is to so many people with so many different illnesses, then I think we'll have people more willing. As it is now, you know, the average Israeli citizen who's against legalization, and there are a lot of people who are against legalization, they say, you know, you have no idea, because I'm a new immigrant and I've lived in Israel for 6 years, you have no idea how the Israeli culture is. The Israelis love to exaggerate with everything. They'll do too much. They'll be smoking every day, all day long, 24 hours a day. You can't imagine how it's going to be until you see it, Michelle. You're so naive because you just love the Israeli people, and I say, when people ask me, why do I live here? Why would I want to live here? I say, well, I love the honesty and the frankness of people. In the United States, people always told me I was too blunt and not diplomatic enough. And in Israel, I'm considered very polite, you know. And it's so funny because, you know, I can't imagine someone in the U.S. considering me polite or diplomatic. But I say what I think all the time. And, you know, in Israel, I'm still somehow, you know, reserved. And the people here really say what's on their mind all the time. And I find it very refreshing and very real. But, you know, people say, so you're so new and in love with the country that you don't realize people here will just go crazy with it. And I really don't think that's true. And I think that they're assuming the worst case scenario. And actually, we have less of a problem with alcohol than they have in the U.S. So I think that, you know, people are afraid because there's less public awareness of all the things. Like, also, people are less people here have been to Holland, even though Israelis are far more traveled than Americans. I think something like 6% of Americans even possess a passport, which is terrible. I don't understand why Americans don't want to travel more, but you do have a lot of traveling in the U.S., and it's a beautiful country, and it is extremely different from California to New Jersey. Extremely different. So you have so much traveling to do just in the U.S., it's true, but I still, you know, Americans have the money to travel abroad, and they're not doing it. Israelis have less funds, and yet they manage to get all over the world. And so they are well-traveled, but I think that less people have been to Holland, and less people, and when they go to foreign countries, English is not their mother tongue, and so they pick up on less things than Americans would pick up on if when they're abroad, you know. And I think one of the things that Israelis fail to appreciate when they're in Holland is that they don't notice that the people in the cafes are never Dutch. The Dutch people themselves are not big stoners at all, right? Have you been to Holland? How often do you meet a Dutch person in a cafe? I went to a cafe. I went to the Cafe Amnesia because a friend of mine in Tucson, Arizona, had been one of the owners at one point in time. Who's working behind the counter? An Israeli guy. We immediately start speaking in Hebrew. And he tells me, oh, you wouldn't believe how many Israelis are living in Amsterdam. I would believe it. You know, I absolutely would believe it. And especially because many of the alternative left-wing population in Israel are disillusioned with the Israeli government. They feel that the Israeli government is not treating the Palestinians well, and they don't want to live in such a country. Although I have to say, I think the left wing is having a very powerful impact on the government here, and so they should be proud of, if they're concerned for the Palestinians, they should be proud of the impact that people who are making it an active effort to influence the government can have, because we're a small country, and so it's much easier to be empowered here. It's much easier to influence change. It's much easier to get into the newspaper, and when you are in the newspaper and when you are in the public eye, the government is watching and the public is watching. So something like this, that we got the opportunity to tell the world about whether or not cannabis is kosher for Pesach, really brings up the issue of the kashrut of cannabis, and it really brings up the issue of cannabis in Israel. And it's good for people to be talking about it, because once they're talking about it, they can't help but learn more.
Well, right on, Michelle. This has been an absolutely wonderful conversation today. And again, I really appreciate you joining us to discuss it.
Thank you. I want to congratulate you and everything that Normal is doing. You inspire us and you give us hope to carry on the torch, even when it seems like we're not making much progress.
Oh, thank you again, Michelle.
Have a nice day, Chris.
Michelle Levine is with the Greenleaf Party in Israel. She joined us by phone from Tel Aviv this afternoon. We have links to the Greenleaf Party on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.